Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
Now, the Jedi could do it, Professor X can sort of do it, and that creepy snake from the Jungle Book can do it as well. Often left to the realm of science fiction or fantasy, the idea of mind control has been around for quite a while. But it is only in recent years that it has not only become more of a possibility, but a probability, just not in the way you're thinking. Dr. Diego Mendoza Halliday is a researcher at the McGovern Institute for Brain Research at MIT. He joins me now. Diego, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. If you wouldn't mind starting off, maybe explaining what optogenetics is.
Sure. Optogenetics is a recent technique. It's been around for at most 14 years. It allows us to control the activity of neurons in the brain using light. And how we do that very simply is by genetically re-engineering neurons to produce a protein, an opsin we call it, that is placed in the membrane of the cell. And now when you shine light onto the cells, the light turns on these proteins and opens these channels, lets ions pass, and boom, the neurons turn on. There's always other ways to use it. You can actually turn off neurons as well. And so you can inhibit and activate cells. And that's basically the principle behind optogenetics.
So you change the genes inside a neuron and get it to express a photosensitive protein that changes the membrane to allow electricity to flow through it or not.
That's pretty much it, basically. That protein is the opsin, and these opsins actually exist. Nature uses them in a variety of organisms, from us down to algae, which is where we get those opsins from. They're typically used to sense light in different ways. So all vision in the planet, or most of it, is actually based on opsins that are placed in photoreceptors in our eyes or in the eyes of other organisms. And they actually turn on these receptors when the light hits them. And now we can use that protein that is available in nature and put it in cells that never see the light of day, like neurons inside the skull. And there you can actually make them do something that they would never do otherwise, which is become sensitive to light.
Why on earth would you want neurons in the brain to be sensitive to light?
We neuroscientists can take advantage of that property. And by making neurons sensitive to light, you can start controlling the system, the brain, to ask questions such as, what is the causal role of a particular population of neurons in a given function of a brain, a behavior? For example, I want to know which neurons are involved in actually moving your pinky in the left hand. So you can basically find neurons in the motor cortex that you think are involved, causally involved in moving your pinky, and you can actually make them sensitive to light and now shine light and see if by shining light and activating them in a synthetic way that is not natural, you can actually make the pinky move. And if you do, then you can actually conclude that these neurons are causally involved in the movement of the pinky. I don't know if that actually makes it a little clearer.
No, it does. So this has actually been done with mice, isn't that right? Where mice have been, they've had this technique of having the neurons altered, and then essentially people were able to remote control them with joysticks in a way. Can you tell us a bit about that research?
That's right. Well, so there's actually plenty of research now in the realm of mice where they, you know, different scientists have been able to control different functions in mice, all the way from making them, for example, run indiscriminately to controlling the feeding behaviors, for example, which is actually part of our research at MIT.
Wow, you can make them hungry or full based on, or at least feel that they're hungry or full based on this. Talk to us a little bit about the way in which you get light into the brain of either a human or a mouse or what it is you're doing, because it's quite invasive, and that was the problem you were trying to solve.
That's right, Jonathan. It's optogenetics so far. The standard techniques that are currently used are pretty invasive. We always make every effort possible to minimize the invasiveness, but it does require a lot of quite a bit of invasion, because you have to insert a little optical fiber. This is actually very tiny, and it goes through the skull and then into the brain, find a little wire that will transfer then the light and eject it at the end of the fiber into the neurons of interest. Now, why is that invasive? It's a very tiny scar on the brain, but it does actually scar the tissue around the shank of this optical fiber. And it causes some damage to the brain around the area, especially when you have implanted these fibers long term, which is something that obviously becomes important if you're thinking of the potential use of optogenetics for clinical purposes, implanting this in patients in the future.
I mean, among the complications are infection, because you are you're inserting something into the brain that's a dangerous thing to do. In humans particularly, but also the transfer of light over time can actually cause heat, which can actually damage the neurons themselves as well. So
that's the other thing, yes.
So in humans, you'd require, this is a brain surgery essentially. And so that was the issue that you wanted to look at, because if we can control neurons from outside the brain without doing that, then it gives us a huge potential to understand the brain, but also to treat some conditions potentially. Can you talk us through what your novel approach is about?
We have a new protein, like the ones I was describing before, the opsins. This is a new version of it with a mutation that was designed by a team of colleagues of mine at MIT. They generated this new version of the protein that has a little change in the instructions, in the DNA instructions that you insert in the neurons, that make them produce a variant of the protein that is much more sensitive to light than its parent opsin, or basically the other opsins that have been available so far. So we claim that it might actually represent the most sensitive, light sensitive opsin so far produced.
Okay, so that's great, but then our brain is still inside a skull, which is made of pretty thick bone. Just because you have made a protein that's not as sensitive to light but still works, you still need to get the light there. What are you suggesting? Headlamps?
Yes, well, so what we've actually done in animal models and that are pretty close to humans, in this case primates, is we have been able to shine light onto the dura, which is a little cover around the brain right underneath the skull, and shining light over the dura without actually opening the dura, we've demonstrated, is enough to activate neurons all over the outside region of the brain called the cortex. And so this is quite one of the advances that we're demonstrating in our study, because obviously the next step after testing this in primates is the possibility of doing the same in humans. If you have to open the skull, which is something that is regularly done in neurosurgeries for all sorts of treatments, but you don't have to actually touch the brain, nor the dura, the protection to the brain, you're already a step ahead, because you're minimizing the invasiveness, especially regarding to the potential of infection, which happens anytime you get inside of that protective layer.
Yeah. Totally. And of course, infections are huge problems when it comes to surgery, and the potential for infection makes lots of surgery impossible or much more dangerous as a result. So my question is, how much light do you need? Because is it possible, if you use this for a treatment in patients, is it possible that if they bent down to get their keys and a large headlamp from a halogen bulb on a new BMW, hit the back of their head, Could those neurons then suddenly fire unexpectedly?
Right. So the idea would be that if the source of light that would be implanted is actually sealed inside the skull or protected by the skull, then no other light from the outside will be able to reach the neurons that have been manipulated to be sensitive to light. So that would not be a problem. But I think you pointed out a little complication, which is heating might be a difficulty. So the fact that light transfers some energy, that energy becomes heat in the tissue, means that it's important to consider the amount of light that you want to shine onto the neurons. And so that's another kind of important advance in the use of our new opsin, which is that because it is so light sensitive, you now need less light, lower power of light to activate these neurons and then are minimizing and reducing the potential for heating effects. What was demonstrated is that in rodents, which have a very thin skull, you can actually leave the skull completely intact and shine light through it. And light will go straight through the skull and the brain all the way into the neurons of interest and activate them. That's in mice. In larger organisms, the skull is much thicker. Now, what we haven't tried, and it's something that is definitely a possibility, is that by thinning the skull, basically reducing its thickness to a minimum, but not opening it, you might be able to get the light through inside. You could place potentially those sources of light right over the thin skull and basically seal the head. The patient basically, or the animal would basically have potentially a tiny little wire coming out of the skin, but nothing else. Basically, the organism appears completely normal otherwise, and that little implant would remain basically sitting in the thin skull and turning on the light whenever the neurons need to be activated or deactivated.
So I can see the potential of being able to shine a torch at a rodent with a thin skull and be able to turn these neurons on and off. It makes things so much easier, I would imagine. It makes the whole process so much quicker and less problematic in terms of infections for the mice. And the idea that a patient might agree to having their skull thinned so you can stick an LED under their skin, I'm not sure. I don't know how many people would sign up to that. But I mean, it's an interesting idea.
I agree with that. the problem is that some patients' other alternatives are to live with their disorder for the rest of their lives. Some of these disorders are actually lethal. They can either disable the patient completely, make them completely unable to live their lives normally, or sometimes can kill them. So if the alternative is to have a surgery where you're not feeling anything at all, something is implanted that later becomes completely invisible, it becomes a little bit more feasible, I believe.
Totally. So if we're talking about being able to do this, being able to control neurons that go on and off, how do you target the specific neurons you want?
Well, there are two answers to that question. One is if the neurons that you want are neurons in a given area of the brain, region of the brain, then the way to do it is basically to inject this opsin gene that we're talking about. We do it. We basically use genetic engineering, standard genetic engineering tools for that. Where the DNA, the instructions for the neuron to create this protein and put it in their membranes, that DNA is inserted in a virus that is inert. It doesn't actually do anything to the organism other than going into the neurons, injecting that piece of DNA and having them express that opsin.
So you inject it into the site of the neurons, and the virus then spreads or stays locally to that?
Well, it spreads in a given local area of the brain. So you can actually control where you place it and which neurons or which brain area you want to activate with light. The second way you can do it, which is even fancier than that, I believe, and that makes optogenetics quite special compared to other techniques that neuroscientists and even neurosurgeons use, is that you can target genetically particular types of neurons within the population of neurons that you're actually targeting. So you can have some inhibitory neurons in the brain. You have excitatory neurons and a lot of subtypes of neurons. And so we're looking at the microcircuitry of the brain at this point. And you can decide, well, I want this particular type of inhibitory neuron to be activated and nobody else. And so that you can imagine, Jonathan, the potential of that for not only neuroscience, understanding the circuitry of the brain, how different types of neurons interconnect and what their functions are, but also if we are able to understand the circuitry and how it doesn't work when there's a disorder, then we can target specifically the neurons that are basically the source of the disorder and not the others, and minimize the invasiveness.
Talk to me finally about the sort of conditions that if we had this complete control over neurons, we would be able to cure.
Right. So there's Parkinson's. So you have also Huntington's disease and epilepsy, among many others. I can tell you others, but we can limit it to those three. There's actually many patients that suffer from these disorders. And in epilepsy specifically, you have this problem of overactivity of neurons that become overactive and create a storm in the brain that goes everywhere. And you can imagine that if you can restore this balance and shut them down, then you can avoid these kind of storms and have a patient prevent their seizures or their epileptic attacks.
Absolutely fascinating work. Dr. Diego Mendoza-Halliday from MIT, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Jonathan.